This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout, no code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts for up to 50% off. Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I'm feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit, and supports better sleep quality and recovery, in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Context Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Danny Yoshikawa, head coach at West Valley College in Saratoga. Coach, super pumped to have you here finally. Get to reminisce over the last 25 years and see what you've learned that you can share with others and hopefully guide them on their journey.
Coach Climo, excited to be here, man. I'm sorry it took me so long to come on. I love what you're doing. I love how you're giving back to the coaching community by doing these podcasts. And yeah, just excited to be here that we can actually steal a morning and do this.
No doubt. So let's dive right in and maximize our time. Opening salvo here. Take us through your background as a coach. How did you end up in coaching? What was the process like for you landing your first job? And then as you've had many stops along the way until you landed in your second stint here at West Valley, would love to know just how that journey went.
Man, good question. So I think first and foremost, like a lot of us, I got into basketball because I played it. And when you and I were together at Davis, I actually thought I was going to try to become a lawyer and I was going to go into international law. I didn't want to litigate, but I thought I was going to do contracts and all this other stuff. And then life slaps you across the face. And from some life lessons, I've learned that life is very short. And when that happened to me, I kind of pivoted and decided that I wanted to be a high school teacher and a coach at that time. I just made the assumption that basketball had taught me so much about myself and it had never brought me anything but joy. And so why would I ever go away from it? So I spent a year and kind of traveled a little bit and got my thoughts together. And then I came back and I met with Coach Burton, Bob Burton, who was my mentor at West Valley before I played at Davis, who went on and coached 13 years at Cal State Fullerton and went to an NCAA tournament. Just one of the greatest coaches I've ever been around. And he actually tried to convince me not to. He thought, no, man, go do something else. And so he wouldn't actually take me. So I had to come back 2 days later and tell him I wanted it. And he made me go home again. And then I had to come back the next day. And then he said, okay. That's basically how my journey started. I was an assistant at West Valley for 3 years. And then he was friends with another great coach, Mike Legarza. Both of these guys are in the Hall of Fame. And Mike was at the time, and Mike was looking for a coach to possibly take over his program as he left and joined the Positive Coaching Alliance at Stanford. So we met. Coach Legarza was amazing. And yeah, it really sold me on what that thing could be. And here I am, and I become a head coach when I'm 26 because of the people that I know. And Coach Burton ended up leaving and going to the four-year level. And I came back to take over the program. And that's really, that first year, those guys at Kenyatta, that team, we all still talk. We're very close. Chris Victor, who's the head coach at Seattle, was my point guard. I have dudes that are in Kansas and Texas. Jason Hardy is the football coach at CSM. That team was really close. We had a good team. And I look back on these early years very fondly, including my first year at West Valley. That was that. And I got my feet wet and grew. And after about 2 or 3 years, with Coach Burton being at Fullerton, Bob Williams being at Santa Barbara, and a few others that were talking to me about the four-year level, I didn't think I wanted to do it. Like I said, originally, I thought I would be a high school coach and be happy, but I ended up scratching that itch. And I just told myself, if I don't go now, then I always wonder what would happen if I would have gone. So I ended up leaving in 2007. And that took me to places like Santa Barbara. And I was on the hilltop at USF with Rex Walters. And during that time, I combined my love for travel with recruiting, and I began really recruiting international players and going overseas and developing that side of me. So that part was great. I took a year off. I've always gone against the grain, as you already know, Climo, but I just decided to do something that was once in a lifetime. And I took a trip off and traveled around the world. And that was wonderful. Like I kind of got to visit like academies that I always wanted to visit and do a little bit of professional development, but mostly just travel and live a retired life before retirement. So that ended up actually landing me a job in Japan. And so that's how I got to Japan. And then from there, Japan was falling apart and every head coach in the league was fired. And it wasn't in a good place at the time. Now it's in a great place, and it's such a wonderful country. And literally, we would still be there. Me and my family would still be there. And we loved it so much. But that's what brought me back to St. Mary's. And then those 4.5 years with Coach Bennett were probably the best professionally of my career. Just an incredibly rich and great learning experience, just trying to compete with the high majors of the world. And yeah, the good part for me was the reason why it was so easy for me to fit in there is because it's all, everyone thinks this, that, or the other about Randy Bennett. It's all hard work and old school coaching. The dude is an amazing coach and probably the best leader I've ever been around. That's what was great about being back there. It brought me back to my roots, to be honest. In that time, I had two babies. I had two in diapers. Life was chaotic, to say the least. And when this opportunity at West Valley came up, it wasn't something that I thought I would actually consider, but I've always had the mindset of I always entertain anything that comes my way. And I really take a big look at it. And I ask myself, is this good for me and my happiness? After really evaluating it, it was a great job before, and it's even a better job now. And this was a place where I felt I could be a good dad and a good coach. And I think at the Division I level, it's really hard to do that. And you definitely cannot be a great dad and a great coach, 100%. There's just not enough time in the day. This was a level where I'm like, okay, I really enjoy coaching. I've never cared about the level. I don't care if it's professional or the Big West or the WCC or the top 25 or, and I've never cared. It's just all coaching to me. And so this is a level where I could be a good coach and a good dad. And yeah, super happy that I landed back here.
Okay. I got a lot, Danny. We're going to go into some in the weeds here. And traditionally, I have a template that I run through that I'm going to veer away from based on some of the things you already shared, and we'll probably come back to it. So number one, hilarious to me that you led with, I wanted to be a lawyer and go into international relations because my eldest daughter, who's a junior in college, like that's her plan. She's actually in Florida studying abroad right now, went in as a soc major, pivoted to poli sci and wants to go into international law. So hilarious.
There you go.
Full circle moment. We'll see if that holds, right?
You never know. Yeah, of course.
But also, you bring up the Japan story, and this has nothing to do with you, but you'll laugh at me. I never had a passport until right before COVID, got one, COVID hit, and did my first international trip last spring with my middle child, my younger daughter, where we went with the school on a trip to Japan because she took Japanese for 4 years. And so cool to what you said that now we're taking the whole family back in March a second time. So anyone who hasn't been, it is a cool ass place. Go check it out. We'll talk more Japan when we get off the call, Dan. But
For sure. It's a great place. I've traveled all over the world. It's in my top five. It's just such. And what I love about it for first trips is it's so secure, so safe. So for like younger people, for women, solo women travelers, I always recommend Japan.
Yep. No doubt. And we could riff about that for a couple hours, but let's pivot back into basketball. 26, first head coaching job. And you were all of a sudden sliding over from the assistant chair to the head coaching chair. And I always ask, what did you realize right away that you needed to figure out, especially coming from the pedigree that you did with both Bobs, Williams and Burton and LaGarza, where it's, man, I'm prepared. I've had some great mentors and now I'm in charge. What did you realize right away that you had no idea and you need to figure out?
Keep me on track, Climo, but I want to address something that I think could help young coaches. Whether you're a head coach or not, I think you just hit it on the head. I want to talk about mentorship. Because 2 years later, in my first year at West Valley, we're over at De Anza, and we're 25-9 that year. We lost in the NorCal championship to Santa Rosa on a last second play, but we're pretty good, and just not quite enough to get over the hump, but just we're pretty good for my first year. And we're at De Anza, and Ryan Madry, who's the associate head coach at Santa Clara now, he goes in and makes one of his shots, which he did about 6 or 7 times that year, and we win the game. And my assistant, Donnie Guarinoni, and Donnie went on to coach at Stanford and LSU and TCU and lastly Harvard, just another great West Valley guy. He turns to me, he's laughing, all excited, and he goes, hey, what's wrong? He's, why aren't you excited? I go, I just realized I really thought I was a good coach. Hey, first year we went 20-11, my first year. Oh, that's great. Now this year we're pretty good. I'm like, I just figured out the reason why we're winning is because of that dude. It has nothing to do with me at all. So anyway, what I would say is, like I said, whether you've been a head coach for a few years or not, if you got the fire in your belly, you know where you are in terms of your own growth process. And I turned to him after that and I said, the difference between you and I and everybody else here is that we had great mentors. So like I said, I'm sitting there playing for the best, Burton Williams, and then I go back and work for the best, and working for a good coach like Coach Burton is way harder than playing for him, and playing for him was tough. And so now you're working for him. And then you have these resources. You have Coach Burton, you have Coach Williams, Coach LaGarza, who's been an incredible mentor to me my entire coaching career. And then I go over that summer before I start at Kenyatta, and I go over to Coach Newell's clinic in Santa Cruz High. And Coach Burton introduced me to a guy named Mike Dunlap. So it's, and then Mike ends up calling me, because just being the guy that Coach Dunlap is, like, he calls me every Monday morning. I didn't talk to Coach Burton a ton. Coach LaGarza told me, I'm not going to talk to you. You need to learn. You don't need to lean on other people. You got to be thrown in the fire and you're going to learn. But Coach Dunlap, he called me every Monday morning out of the blue, just to check in and give me some advice and so forth. My mentorship was insane, insane. When people look at, oh, what makes this guy good or that guy good? I can almost guarantee you that they've had two things happen: really hard work, and they study it, and they've had great mentors. So that's what I want to at least begin with, because I actually think that's something that can help young guys. Like, it's okay to leave and go get with an older dude that really knows what he's doing. And if you spend 1 or 2 or 3 years with that guy, it's going to grow you as a head coach when you come back and have your own job.
1000%. And it leads right into that question. So you had that mentorship.
Yeah.
And then you slid over and you're prepared, but you're not, because none of us are, right? So no. What are some of the things you remember from that first stint at West Valley?
Yep.
To your second stint at West Valley after these other mentors?
Totally. The first thing I'll tell you, like I said, is I asked LaGarza, hey, is there anything I can do to fast forward the clock? How long will it take me until I'm really comfortable? This is my first year. And he said, yeah, 4 or 5 years. Like, there's no way to fast forward that clock. You got to go through your trials and tribulations. And he said, the difference at the end of that time period between you and the next guy who's not going to be as good is, do you learn from your mistakes and do you study them and do you grow? And so that has stuck with me all the time. And I still do that. Like, I watched film this morning before talking to you on practice yesterday. I was like, oh man, that was terrible. What am I thinking? And so that has always stuck with me. Another thing, and more pragmatic for the young coach, I talked to Coach Dunlap and I go, yeah, my guys are great. We got a great group of guys. They work really hard. The first hour of practice, like the first half of practice, they're amazing. And I said, but after that, I lose them. And Kenyatta at the time did not have women's volleyball and they did not have women's basketball. It was our gym. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there talking to me. He goes, oh, that's interesting. He goes, how strict are you with the timing of your practice plan? Mm-hmm. And I put the 10 to 15 minutes, but I don't know. So if we don't do it right, we're going to keep doing it. So I figured out in talking to my assistant at the time, Al Addles, that my practices were going for about 3.5 hours because I had no time constraints. So of course they were getting tired after an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. These guys are dying. I'm just killing them the whole time. And those were intense practices too. Just so funny. So I'm like, okay. So all of a sudden it's the Bobby Knight thing. It's the 10 minutes per section. Boom. Now I write 9 because I know I don't want to go to 10 because I'm usually going to teeter on going over. So anyway, as soon as I changed that, it changed everything. And that was something I think that young coaches do. We tend to, as players, as former players, and I tell this to my assistants, I have the greatest staff in the state, but they're young dudes that used to play. And as a player, your focus has got to be like this. As a shooter, as a passer, whatever you're going to do, your focus is here. But as a head coach, You got to see everything. You got to see what's going on behind you. You got to see three steps down the line. Focus on the big rocks. And that was always like Randy Bennett's thing. Just concentrate on the big rocks, man. We'll take care of the details later. And so anyway, I think that those two things right there, as if I was a young coach, you're making it, hey, 10 minutes a segment. I'll just keep chipping away at that segment every day. But we got to break the monotony. We got to get to other things. And you got to be prepared to play. And Coach Dunlap would always say, when you start practice in the fall, and a lot of these high school guys just started practice, you want to be prepared to literally play a game at the end of the week. If that's the case, then you're doing real big rocks. Do you have an out-of-bounds play in? Do you have your base defense in? Do you have your ATOs? Whatever would take to play a game. Do you huddle at free throws? Something as simple as that. A lot of guys want guys to huddle at free throws, but they never practice it. It's not good in the beginning. I've always taken that approach. Hey, we got to be ready to play on Saturday. We got four practices, and we're just going to concentrate on those things. Then we come back to the detail. So for me, it's always teach the whole, and then go back to the part, and then go back to the whole. Always, with everything that we do. Those would be the two things I think I really struggled with in my first 2 years, my first year at Kenyatta and my first year at West Valley.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us still struggle with that today. And I'm sure you find yourself in those moments where it's like you get past that 10 minutes, you got to remind yourself. And it was like, I had this conversation yesterday with my group before practice. And I said, we have 5 days this week, then we're gone for 9 days, and then we have 2 days, and then we got to play a game. So we're not going to be in the details. We're not going to be doing all these things. Then we get into practice, and I got some owies, and it's like, we got to pivot. We got to do
this. You always got to make plays, man. You always got to go from the hip.
I love that. Okay, so let's go back to your mentorship conversation, because I think you have had a journey that has allowed for such elite mentorship. And you said something earlier that you got to go through the fire. You got to learn on your own. And one of my mentors talks all the time about, you can get knowledge from books, from studying, but you can't get wisdom. That comes with time. That comes with experience, right? So what would you say that you could offer to others that you learned from Coach Williams, Coach Burton, Coach Dunlap, that are like the key things, Coach Bennett, that you lean on from those people? Right. And so it's, hey, this is something that Coach Williams said. It's the one takeaway I lean on all the time. And just go through a list of nuggets that you can offer up that have been invaluable in your path.
This will be off the top of my head, because you're right. That's a great question. That's something that I should really give a lot of thought to and produce. But I start with Coach Burton. Obviously, everyone talks about how tough his teams were. So the toughness factor, he was a really good teacher, but it was like, okay, how do you get through a pin down? He did not care. You just get through it. You figure it out and you get through it, or something bad is going to happen. It was really that simple. And there's a lot to be said. Sometimes guys ask questions and it's, I can't answer that because I don't know the situation of the game. You know what I mean? I don't know who you're guarding. For example, on a pin down, are you going to go one man removed? Are you going to trail it? Are you going to try to fight through it? Whatever. It depends. It really does. It really does depend. He was asking us at that young age to be players. Basically, be a player, make a decision, and be tough and get through the screen. And he was incredible with his toughness at holding guys accountable. And even in the fine details of things, he would hold you accountable. And then the last thing that he did, I think that was so unique to him, was he made you hate losing as much as he did. And that's something that I think is very difficult, almost impossible to do in today's generation. But back then, I found that was a very powerful tool, that we grew to hate losing through his methods as much as he did. And it made us such better and more fierce competitors. There are so many things. I could write a book just on Coach Burton. We talk about skill development, and we really take a lot of pride in our skill development and player development. And I laugh. I'm like, there's no substitution for every Tuesday and Thursday night playing against Santa Clara, San Jose State, Stanford, USF, and St. Mary's. And that's who we played against as players. And in my first stint too, that's what we did with our open gyms. And we played a six, we played a seven. We learned that if we took great shots and we were tough, we could beat those guys because it was a very short game. And so that was way better player development than any of the skill stuff that's going on now. And we do all of it. We do all the skill stuff, but the distinction that we make is there is a big difference, and our players understand this. There's a big difference between skill and player development. And a lot of people want to lump those things together, but they're not. A skill is something that you acquire. Player development is, are you making the right reads on the floor? Are you playing the game the right way? Player development could be taking a lazy kid and making him into a kid that plays ferociously with a motor. That's player development. It could be taking an insecure kid and making him a confident person. That's player development. There's other things. And I think people get lumped into what is skill development, what's player development. If they have all the skill in the world and they don't make the right decision in the right time frame, then they're not a good player. Anyway, and that's, I always go back to that. That's what an incredible thing he did for us in terms of player development. Coach Williams, man, he's just one of the smartest dudes that you and I have ever been around. And he was different. He would say, hey, on that pin down, I want you to come through the inside because that guy's a driver. And he really was more of a teacher when it came to all those things. Great offensive coach. Knew where to get guys off in space, how to run a system, because we definitely ran the system, but also how to live with a contested three, for example, for a great shooter. That we had great shooters there at Davis. I think, and then even going back and working for him at Santa Barbara, I remember being at halftime when one of our kids, one of our kids from Bosnia, wasn't playing well, and coach had just lost his mind and was really upset. And so instead of really taking it out on him like he would do in the old days at halftime, he took it out on me. Because I was saying, hey, we need to do this. And I was running the defense. And so he apologized. And afterwards, he goes, I'm sorry. I was just so upset. And he said, one thing I've changed is I never yell at players on the bench. So if I'm going to be emotional or undress them, like it's going to be in the locker room, I'm never going to embarrass them in front of their family or other people and so forth and so on. So he was just, in terms of being tactful, he was just elite in terms of all those things. He was just so smart. And then the thing about Coach Williams is it really, and I give that example, it's really the opposite. Like nothing ever bothered him. He was really big rocks. Hey, this kid has a D in class, and he wouldn't let it get to him at all. He would deal with it, but he didn't freak out over things at all. And he laughed things off. That year with him in Santa Barbara was probably my favorite year of coaching. It was just spending time with him and learning how to not be so intense like I was, and how to pick and choose your battles when it comes to competing. And I don't know, he was just phenomenal there. Rex was a warrior. He was number one about getting in the gym. That is the first time I had heard that. We coached Alex Harris at UC Santa Barbara, who ended up being a great pro and a great kid. And he was the first one I saw in the gym every day before practice, after practice. And he's the MVP of the Big West. You get to USF and Rex is coming from an NBA background. And he was just on these guys about being in the gym on their own, on their own. He was already a tough dude, a fierce competitor, really good offensively. And a lot of people really misunderstand what they would see on TV or what they'd see at a game, what he was. He was amazing and completely loyal to his players and just an amazing dude that way. But that was really what I got from him. Okay, you got to be in the gym. If you want to be good at any level, you got to be doing it on your own. On your own, you got to be in the gym. Yeah. And then I talked a little bit about Randy earlier. Best leader I've ever been around, has an invaluable way of combining and balancing toughness with giving people confidence. That's how I would describe him. He is right on that line. He's always, I joke around, if I ever wrote a book to make money, it'd be Randy Bennett Living in the Gray. And what I would mean by that is, like, he was so good at pushing the line. You want guys to be fresh at that level so they can perform. Right. But you don't want to just rest them either. Like they got to play, they got to practice. And he would just push that line better than anybody I've been around. He knew exactly when to relax and when to rest those guys, exactly when to push them forward, because that program and that culture is, in my opinion, the best and probably the best in the country in terms of hard work. He was just an amazing leader, amazing leader. And the first that I had been around that delegated offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, stuff like that, where he was just managing the game and so good with his players. Man, he's just so good.
So with all that leadership and mentorship and then your own experience as a head coach in multiple stops, what would you say is the best thing you do in your program that has the largest ripple effect on your culture? And you mentioned big rocks. So culture's a buzzword. I don't want to get into the weeds on that, but I do want to get into the weeds on, hey, we do this. And if I left tomorrow to take another job, we would do this regardless of what sport it was, regardless of where it was.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Really, my players and my assistant coaches would probably answer that better, honestly, because I'm just so lost in my everyday function. But probably communicate. We do our best to answer the why and teach the why, because there's always why. And I feel, especially in today's generation, if they don't understand the why of what they're doing, the old school guys that were raised by old school people like me that just go, hey, just do it. Hey, just do it. I don't think it's going to work. I really don't. And there are times, and our team understands that there are times where I do not have time to explain, and I just need you to trust me and do it. But I will always, after practice, sit down with you and explain the why. Always. And you can't, and they also understand that you can't be insecure either. You can't be asking, why do I do that? Because you're insecure. If you're truly inquisitive and you really want to know, well, that doesn't make sense to me, I want to hear about it. Because for me, I think players have actually a better feel for what's going on the floor than I do. I actually want to hear about it, and then we can discuss it. But always teaching that why and having those communication lines open. That would be any sport. I think that's really important. And then we would guard. I don't care if we're soccer, football, baseball. We'd win a whole bunch of games 1-0 if we had to. It doesn't matter. We would really guard, because I think that defensive rebounding is something that you can control. I really do. And that's an effort thing. It's a culture thing. It's what we do. We try to be number one in the state every year in those two statistical categories. So that's our goal every year. And so we have to guard.
So I'm going to do something I never do, Danny. And right. I'm going to ask, because you brought up defensive rebounding. I never get in the weeds. I stay in the big rocks. But I want to know, if that's something you can control, what is your 3-bullet-point strategy that you would offer to become elite at that?
Obviously, the bigger you are, the better you are in both of those things. So that's something you maybe can't control. But what I mean by that is your effort. And in my first few years at West Valley, I used to write at the top of my practice plan, and this was a Coach Dunlap thing. You are what you emphasize. Everyone's looking for like magic drills. Oh, let's put the rim cap on and go get rebounds and all that stuff. You are what you emphasize, man. If you're constantly talking about rebounding, constantly, like, then you're going to be a good rebounding team. If you're constantly talking about ball pressure all the time, on the court, off the court, we're watching film, we're talking about, and that's what you're picking, like ball pressure, then you're probably going to be pretty good at ball pressure. All right. So that's what I would tell you. There's no, in my opinion, anyway, just my opinion, there's no magic formula to that, but what part of the game I want to get done. And I'm going to try to emphasize that out of my mouth, out of our drills, whatever. It's that we're all in, and maybe it's, hey, running hard after makes or whatever it is. We're all in, we're doing drills to it. We're emphasizing it that day.
No, I'm right there with you, because it's always when you get asked questions as an elder statesman in your space, be it college, be it high school, whatever, it generally leads with, what drill would you do there? And I'm with you. It's, yo, you just value it. If you're going to give an offensive rebound is worth 5 points and a buck is worth one, like, you're suddenly going to become good at it.
I 100% agree. 100%. Exactly.
So I think that was the perfect answer to that question. All right, curveball. Yeah. I know you're a basketball, like, eat, sleep guy, but I also know you're an elite sports fan and you get into other things. And you're also in a position, having been at stops where they had really good programs that weren't basketball, right? And you're curious enough to go in and figure out some things by watching these other sports. I'm always curious, because I'm super bullish at this point in my life on multi-sport athletes and how you can learn things about coaching from people that aren't in your discipline? What have you learned watching other sports or other coaches in disciplines that aren't basketball that you have stolen directly and applied and morphed into your basketball journey?
That's a great question. I always enjoy the other sports, but honestly, I'm not that dude. I'm not that dude that goes and watches football practice and all that. I'd rather spend a week and go watch Duke and North Carolina practice basketball. And that's one thing that I always did. I always took off for 4 or 5 days and watched a really good basketball coach. I was lucky. I spent 2 weeks with Rick Majerus and we went back to Duke and North Carolina. I took my assistants for a week. Like, I think for me personally, that's been my path. I can always tell the great teachers, especially at our school. We had a master teacher that used to write speeches for Bill Clinton. His name is Randy Fugishin, and he's retired now, but I would sneak in and do my class checks at that time. I don't do them anymore. And I would just be overwhelmed by his ability to speak because that he was a master at it. And the way he would change his tone and his volume and emphasize certain things. And it was just, whenever you see a great teacher, you can definitely recognize it. And even nowadays, I'm getting into, as you've already done with youth sports, it's hard to get them because most of them are kind of volunteer moms and dads. But when you do get one, you're like, oh, I want that one. Like, we just finished fall ball for baseball. And there's a coach out here. I'm like, okay, next year I want that dude. Like, that dude knows what he's doing. Like, you can recognize it. But there hasn't been any nuggets, honestly, that I've stolen from other sport coaches. There really hasn't been.
And that's fine. It's the fact that you just named, I can recognize good teaching regardless of the venue.
Yes.
And you even brought it to the classroom, right? But let's go now. You brought this up with the youth sports. As your children are getting older, how have you reflected upon, if not made changes yet, but your own practice based on the experience your children are having?
After having kids, I think it makes me a more empathetic coach. And in my return to West Valley in 2019, I think I got the job July 30th, something like that. It was pretty late. We had a really young group, a good group, but a young group. And we had no culture set, no leadership, but it allowed me to, so let me take you through this. So we are up 20 on a team that we should be up 20 on, or at least beating. They end up roaring back. We fall apart and they beat us in overtime. And so I think it's still 2001. So I go, hey, keep your shoes on, clear the gym out. Here we go. So we get the stats and go, hey, we had 22 turnovers. We're going to run for every single turnover. Yeah, we're going to run a 17 for every single turnover. This is what's going to happen. So we get in there and we're running. And I don't know, we get to 12, something like that. And then I'm like, yeah, I've had it. That's good. You guys hit it and we'll see you tomorrow. And on the drive home, I decided I'm never doing that again. I have become, in my former players, they call me, or their belief is that I'm soft because I was a lot more intense back in the day. But when you have children, you become more empathetic. And when a dude is not, when he's not, I don't know, bringing a maximum effort, or maybe he says something under his breath that isn't indicative of having a great championship attitude or whatever you're trying to go for. And that happens all the time. I don't have any knee-jerk reactions anymore. I let it sit. And then I usually try to talk to the guy. And 9 times out of 10, I usually find out that there's something else going on off the court. And so I'm thankful that I don't just, because yeah, full disclosure, full transparency. My daughter is challenging, man. Like, she's, it does not matter. You could try timeouts. You could try being positive. It doesn't matter. Like, when she's in a mood, she's in a mood. I've just discovered that sometimes the best thing to do sometimes is nothing. And to let them know that, hey, if you need me, I'm here for you. And so I think that it's very difficult to be someone different as a father that you are as a coach. And so I think those two worlds intertwine. They're not exact, right? I got a 7-year-old and a guy that just turned 9. So I definitely don't treat them all the same. But the empathy factor is much greater now than it's ever been. And I really try to let them know, hey, no matter what, hey, that behavior is unacceptable, but I'm here for you. What's going on? Are you okay? So that would be, I think, my biggest thing since having kids out there. And it does change when you're coaching other players. I'm a dad, and they have dads, they have moms, they have dads, and that's somebody's son. And so I'm looking at it differently now, almost like nephews or even extension of my own family or whatever, that these guys are still boys. And sometimes we have bad days. So I've definitely softened when it comes to that since my kids.
I don't think you are alone in that your former players and or those that are with you 15 years later are calling you soft. I think that has been a refrain on every one of these episodes of the more experienced coaches, me included, where the guy that is now our head boys coach was a player of mine in Sacramento and been with me the last 2 years as an assistant. And he would regale the players with stories very similar to the one you told.
Yeah.
I would never, ever do that at this point in my life.
Yes.
But back then, small gym. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. It's crazy how it changes.
Yeah.
But it was a really good epiphany for me. We had lost, I think we started off 2-5 that year. We ended up 17-11. We won the league for the first time in 16 years. And what I did from that point on was I said, they're all freshmen. We're not going to be very good this year, but I'm going to teach and we're going to show film and we're just going to keep teaching. I'm not going to get emotional and we're just going to teach the game. All of a sudden, man, we ended up having a great year because the lights went on in like mid-December and it was an incredible thing. If I would have drove that car right into the ground if I would have reacted the other way.
You brought that up and I think it echoes where you are on the journey, where I am on the journey, and where I would say most, again, I'm using the word experience, not older, because that all comes depending on when you got your start, but coming about process versus outcome. And I think that's a big pivot in a coach's life. Can you talk a little bit about how clear that is now with you versus when you were early on? And if you had a do-over, how you would try to get yourself there faster?
Yeah. I think you just hit it on the head, Justin. I think in all honesty, I'm way better. We're all way better coaches as we get more experienced. But honestly, like I've always believed in the process. I've always believed in the journey, not the destination, which is probably why I'm back at West Valley. Honestly, I remember like Rex talking to me, why are you doing that? Because it's a great job. It's a great job. My life is great. It's a great job. It's all about the journey for me. It always has been. And even now, we're probably got one of the best teams in the state, if not the best. And I told our guys, our job is to come in this moment and play hard and get better today. You can't look at, hey, are you going to win 30 games or are you going to win the whole thing or are you going to lose the whole thing? Whatever it is, you can't look at it that way. You got to stay in the process. And that has been the epitome of my playing career and coaching career is just working in the moment and that the product will always take care of itself. Always. You hit it exactly on the head. But luckily, I don't think I actually started off, oh, we got to win. No, it was never about that. Really, it wasn't.
I love that. I think that's where you can live in that moment and you can live in that mental space. At the end of the day, being not attached to outcome or what PGC says, having a NATO mindset allows you to enjoy the moments, right? Yeah. Versus you're trying to hit this arbitrary goal that you've set that it's drop your expectations and your comparisons and just be. Right. And whatever the cliche, be where your feet are and that type of deal.
Amen, though. Amen. Zero expectations. Yeah. Zero.
Yeah.
So we control our effort and our attitude every day. And that is the expectation. And that is it, honestly.
No doubt. And what's funny, so I have control the controllables has been something I've said since 2003 when you mentioned Majerus. I talked to Jimmy Carroll about trying to get him to come be my assistant at one point. And while we were talking, it was like, hey, what's the best thing you learned from Majerus? And he said, don't spend a second of your life worrying about something you can't control. And that was like my takeaway from that moment. I've never even met. Oh, I lied. We did meet him when he was at Santa Barbara at team camp that one time. But I haven't ever spent time with him really, but that's been something that, like, I have it printed on wristbands for our athletes here. It's your energy, attitude, effort, energy. You can control that. Everything else, tune out the noise.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask this as a follow-up, because you brought it up really early. I wanted to be somewhere where I could be a good dad and a good coach. And using that as the leaping off point to how your pursuit, let's call it, dreams, ambitions, jobs you would entertain, however you want to frame that, how it changes based on your stage and station in life, right? So when you're coming out by yourself, you are interested in certain things. Once the family comes along, the focus gets narrowed. Talk a little bit about how that has impacted you and how you've seen others either struggle with that and or thrive in that by taking the outside influences that now are real for you and letting that drive the car versus whatever it was early on.
I think it's every man's journey. I don't think we're exclusive with coaching. I think that, I think we're constantly battling who we are and what we stand for, I think, as a man. And then on the other, one of the other hats is as a dad. I really believe that. I think everyone is different. And I think really, especially at this stage in your life and when you're in the midlife, like I think it's important that we ask ourselves what's going to make us happy. And if that's spending 24 hours a day with your children, then you should do that. I really believe that. And if it's not, if it's like me and I go 4 hard days and then I get a break, or I watch them for 3.5 weeks in the summer, and then I take off on my international trip for 2 weeks. Whatever, I just think whatever makes you happy. I think a lot of people don't really, and especially when we're young, we never really ask ourselves, is that going to make me happy? Is that going to make me happy? So I always start with that as my North Star. Whenever I have a decision to make regarding job or whatever it is that going to make me happy in the long run? I think that's what I would probably say to that. I think, like I said, I don't think I'm the only one or we're the only ones going through it. I think everybody is. And that's what makes life unique and challenging and awesome all at the same time. But yeah, I definitely think that as we get older, it's not your priorities. It's time, just the ability to spend time on anything. I don't golf. Like, I would love to go golf. I just laugh. I'm like, who has 5 hours to go and hang out? And it's just awesome. Hey, when we take our boys trips, we golf. And I'm like, this is awesome. But it's like, on a normal weekend, who has 5 hours that they can just say, hey, I don't have anything to do? The guy, if you have kids, you probably don't have 5 hours. You probably don't. So anyway, that's what I would tell you. I don't know if that answers your question or not. That's what I would tell you. For me, I think we all got to figure out what's going to make us happy. Ultimately, to leave an incredible program like St. Mary's and come back to my alma mater was, is it going to make me happy? And I thought, yeah, this is going to make me happy. The ability to spend quality time with my kids who were 2 and 3 at the time and all that, it's going to make me happy.
Yeah, I think the crux of that is you're an incredibly reflective individual, and it becomes, what are the most important things right now? And how do I make those the focus? And that question leads you to that.
Yeah.
At the same time as when I was single, I didn't have these other lives I had to worry about making sure that their part of that journey has to be considered. And 100%. I think that is something that I think people struggle with when they're at that precipice of, wait a second, I didn't sign up for this. No, you did when you didn't have these two appendages. Now that you do, we need to consider their thoughts as well. And so I think, no, you did hit it. I think it's a great answer. I'm going to ask you one more question. I always end with this. And going back to what I said about your ability to reflect and your ability to think about your life, getting into different cultures, all that stuff. But I always ask, what's something you've most recently changed your mind on? And you did it in a deliberate way. And I used to be over here and really dug in, and now I'm over here and here's why. And it doesn't have to be basketball related, Dan.
No, it
could be about anything where it's, if you had talked to me a week ago, I would have been making this argument until I died. But you know what? Now I'm here. And it can be whenever on your timeline. But I'm always curious about that growth mindset piece where people are willing to take a step back and say, you know what? Yeah, I don't hold that belief anymore because of this.
Yeah. Politics to me is a joke. But like with everything, I think I'm an empathetic person. I really do see both sides most of the time. I'm not an extremist at all. Like it's not one way or the other. I can actually, the truth is always somewhere in the middle, always. And so one thing I would say basketball wise is the thing that I have learned is there are many ways to skin a cat. And I think when you're young, you think, oh, this is the way to do it. Watch these guys play. Oh, they're great. There's so many ways to do it. There's so many ways to do it. And even I'm a big believer in shot selection, so to speak, and other things. But even when you play teams that maybe they don't take great shots, but just the mere fact that their coach is loose and lets them be aggressive and gives them confidence, I've learned that those guys are hard to play against. And I have a lot of respect for those teams, a lot. There is no one way to do it. I think we all have to do what we're comfortable with ourselves. And part of that is what we just talked about is knowing yourself and learning who you are. And I think that you go through that. For me, I went through that phase, right? And first, I don't know, whatever, 12, 13 years of my career. And then kids came, right? And I'm almost in another chapter. And I had to relearn who am I now? Because you just hit it. I have these other things to consider. And so once you know yourself, then you just got to coach to yourself. If you're a zone guy, you're a zone guy. If you're a man guy, you're a man guy. Like it's okay. If you're in between like me, you do both, whatever it is. So number one, I would say that, especially for the young guys out there, try not to have expectations and try not to judge yourself or others, because there's a lot of good coaches out there that are doing things that you maybe don't agree with. I very rarely change my opinion on things because I am in the middle, because I am emotionally and politically and everything else reflective and a moderate. I try to see things from both sides, and always trying to be open to maybe both sides of the argument or what have you. So the one thing I would say that might help is I went through a divorce 3 years ago, and going through that was life-changing, and the fact that it actually allowed me to find myself again and try to become healthy and get out on the trail. I used to run on the trail all the time when I was young, and get back out on the trail and be active. And I'm a traveler, Climo. Like I'm a coach and a traveler and a dad. And just for me to be able to take, and I've done trips for 5-6 weeks at a time by myself, and I'm very comfortable doing these trips. So the last 3 years I've taken these little trips, 2 to 3 weeks, different parts of Mexico, and because it's easy. And I just think that you got to really, I would encourage everybody to find themselves. Basketball coaching is what we do. It's not necessarily who you are. And I think for me, I've become a lot happier in terms of just finding my core self. And it had always been there. It's the dude that wants to be healthy, stay active. It's the guy that loves listening to 90s R&B and hip hop. It's the guy that loves to get out on the trail and go for a hike. And God willing, if I feel good, do a little running and all those things. That's what I would tell you as I move into the second half of my life is I know who I am. I'm very simple with my life, and I never do anything that doesn't make me better or happy.
No doubt. And I think to piggyback on what you said, and then we'll wrap, is that search for identity is such a crucial developmental milestone, right? That it's not like you're going to find it and it's never going to change. But when your identity is wrapped up in what you do, when that goes away, you are lost. And to your point, finding myself again, what is our identity? How do we figure out, like you said, I'm a coach and a traveler, right? And my name is Dan Yoshikawa and I'm a basketball coach versus this is my identity. I think that's the biggest thing that I've heard from people transitioning from a professional career of any sort, be it sports or anything else. When they get lost in that being their identity, it's real hard. And I think that's something that people can take away. And I think if anybody's looking to navigate that aspect of their life, I'm part of a group that meets on Sundays that is actually called Insecurities of Identity. If you want more information on that, feel free to reach out to me. But it's something that deals with that piece, which I'm sure you found in the last few years, really brings you a sense of calm, which was missing a lot.
Yes. And that's awesome that you're doing that. I think it's so needed.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Coach, appreciate you coming on. Finally,
got it.
Pumped we were finally able to do this.
Finally, man. Finally. All that touchy-feely stuff. It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. Basketball coaching is the best thing in the world. I will say that. It's the greatest thing. It's just an awesome job and such a great sport when you really look at it and think about it and watch it change. And it's just awesome.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.